these are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at kfarradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. I do have a cold, so if I sound nasally, we're going to blame Joni Skillbrand, who's in the studio with me here last Wednesday of the month. She's a freaking flyer.
I get miles for this?
And you're going to put on a damn good show today, aren't you?
Oh, I did a lot of dam research, that's for sure.
So what dams are we talking about?
We're going to talk about hydroelectric power in the interior.
Dams.
The history of it.
The dams,
yes.
Most people don't realize that there's a history of dams in the interior.
Yes, there is.
And, you know, just one of those things that you, for power, it's not what you think of. You're thinking about coal-fired wood, you know, diesel by via GVEA.
Well, pretty much in today's world, don't you dare talk about damming up anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's frowned upon. We can't do that.
Darn migration of fish.
Yeah, we can't do any of those things. It's more than migration of fish, but yes. But we did have four projects that are part of our history, and I knew about them, but I always did want to know more, and I took the time because I set myself up. I said we were going to do this, so I really enjoyed working on this.
Fairbanks, if you want to call in for questions about Joni's dam show, we're at 907-458-TALK. That's 907-458-8255.
Or if you have any dam questions.
If you have any darn questions about a dam. We got to clean it up now. Okay, we had our fun. Now, tell me about the Tanna Electric Company.
Well, the Tanna Electric Company began in 1905. And by 1906, they had in place a hydroelectric system in the Chattanooga River. And they supplied Cleary City and the surrounding mines with power.
From a hydro system?
Yes. And it was in use until 1909. And then the other three that we're going to talk about also are the Tanna Water and Power Company, and that was a proposed hydroelectric plant in the Tatlanica River. 1912 to 1914. If you don't know where that is, that's up in the upper headwaters of the Wood River area.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the Chattanooga Power Company, which installed a Pelton wheel hydro system in the Davidson Ditch, and that supplied power from 1958 until 1967, so roughly 10 years. It serviced the Chattanooga area. And there are, I'm sure, a lot of people around that still remember that. And then the Rampart Dam was a post-World War II proposal by the Army Corps of Engineers that never came to fruition, and for some pretty obvious reasons, and that proposition is forever off the table, thanks to Jimmy Carter. So, with that, you know, we can start at the beginning with the Tanna Electric Company.
Let's start at the beginning.
Yes. So when you have a new mining camp, or even if you have an oil boom where
or mining district.
Yes. So you have a couple kind of people when you have a boom situation where you had nothing and all of a sudden you have a whole lot of stuff. You have two kinds of people that come in. You have the people that come in to actually work to develop the resource, whatever it is that's generating the boom, and then you have the people that come in to fill the needs of the Sutton population.
Infrastructure.
Yes. And those people view it as a more, it can be a better way to get rich. You can set yourself up for life if you play your cards right, supplying a need in a new camp, you know. And so one of those needs that was really big was power. And in Fairbanks, they had J.A. Haney came in and he set up the power system at the NC Power Plant for Fairbanks. And then he went out to Chattanooga, and in 1905, he looked around because that's where all the action was, and they had a huge need. Cleary City had 2,000 people. They had a huge need for power out there, and so he said, I'm the guy to put it in. And he put it in, and it was at the main plant was located at the where the mouth of Cleary Creek goes into the Chattanooga River. But it was on the opposite side of the river. And he had to build a suspension bridge to get stuff back and forth, you know, when it wasn't frozen. And so he built this plant. And it was his goal to supply power to Cleary, to Fairbanks Creek, to Dome, to Vault, you know, all these locations. And so if you think about it, you go out to a place like that and there's really nothing there, you know, what's the first step? You got to assess the need. You know, you got to ask yourself, okay, I see that we need this. I have the know-how to do it. Do I have enough subscribers?
You have to make it pay for itself and profitable.
That's right. You know, you're going to depend on those subscribers to
buy.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting is back in those days, you didn't have government subsidies or grants for these kinds of projects.
It was done in an old-fashioned way. It had to pay for itself.
You had to go and sell shares in your company, and you had to get capital investment from these rich, wealthy investors that were not in Fairbanks, that's for sure. Nobody here in the early days had any money.
The Guggenheims and stuff like that.
Whoever you could rustle up.
Yep.
And they're going to expect a return on their investment. So it wasn't just the physical hurdles of putting in a plant. It was also the financial hurdles. And you didn't really have much of a safety net. You know, anything you did like that, you were really, really gambling. And so we had some big gamblers in Fairbanks in the early days. Falcon Jocelyn was a gambler. J.A. Haney was a gambler. And he worked with a group of men, and they said, okay, we think this is feasible. Let's do this. And, you know, they're gambling that maybe they'll get a good return. They're gambling on the permanence of Fairbanks and the permanence of our mining district. And so to take people into the future so that you can kind of get an idea of what this was like, if you remember when the pipeline hit Fairbanks.
Yes, I do.
Exploded in population. All of a sudden, there was need for all kinds of things. And this is what it was like back then. And did that stay, though? No. So, you know, when you put in things like this, you have to think about that, too, which they just focused on, we have the demand now. And I'm sure that with these guys, what their plan, ultimate plan was get it built, get it up and running, and then sell it. And they get to take the money, and somebody else can deal with the aftermath.
Yeah.
That is still done all over today. So they have to see, you know, they worked on their business model. They went, okay, yes. There still was some government oversight. You still have to have permits. You're going to be using government land. And believe it or not, a lot of people say, oh, that this is all new. No. No, it was all in place back then. There was all kinds
of
red
tape.
And
you're in a military district. You're not in a territory. You're in a district.
You got to get the thumbs up from these office holders in D.C. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they managed to do all of that. They had to secure the financing, which they got the initial financing. They raised money in a variety of ways, and they got their financing. And then they have to start implementing it. Well, to implement that kind of a power system in a place like Cleary, or in the Chattanooga River drainage, where there's nothing, there's not even a road there. There's a rough trail, mm-hmm. and the Tanana Valley Railroad. That wasn't even finished until, I think, 1906 or 07 through the valley to Chattanooga. So you have to get all this equipment there, but you don't even have a road. This is big equipment, you know. And they had to bring water in, and they had to dig a lot of ditches and flumes and everything else. So common sense says, okay, let's start with what's the minimum we need to start, and let's get that, and then we'll build on that, you know, so that you can get power made up sooner to sell to your subscribers, and you start getting the whole thing going. And that's a smart move. So they got the station up and built. And the first, if initially it wasn't hydro, because you can't run hydro in the winter out of the Chattanooga River. It's going to freeze. Mm-hmm. So they ran wood-fired boilers, and they were using steam to generate the power. And then they were sending the power over to Cleary City and to the nearby mines. And the mines needed a lot of power because they had hoists and thawing and other things that they had to do, and their machinery depended on that power, or they had to order wood, which was getting more and more in short supply. So after they got it up and going the first year, which was in fall of 1905, by the next summer, they went to expand, and that was when they put in the water, the hydro. And everybody was supporting it because now they had power. Mm-hmm. So,
Fairbanks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I learned about atrial fibrillation the hard way. My symptoms would come and go. Shortness of breath, fatigue. I kept going. Then I got so lightheaded, I couldn't. My doctor said I have AFib, so I'm about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. Other symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain can come and go, but the risk of stroke stays. If you have symptoms, tell a doctor. Visit notimetowait.com.
Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Nothing slows my little girl down. Except the stuffy nose.
Mommy.
That's why I use Sinex Children's Saline from Vicks. Sinex instantly clears mucus and everyday stuffy little noses with a gentle, ultra-fine mist designed for kids. Just Sinex? Breathe. Her stuffy nose is gone for now. And so is she.
Sinex Children's Saline. Sinex? Breathe. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Be prepared for the next winter power outage with your Honda generator from the Woodway. Keep your lights on as you back up your home's boiler and freezer. Honda generators are so dependable, so quiet, not to mention easy to use. Overcome winter's unpredictability with Honda generator dependability. Stop into the Woodway on College Road. Choose the Honda generator that's right for you and your household. The Woodway is your premier Honda servicing dealership. Power through winter the Alaskan way, the right way, the Woodway.
KFAR weather.
Mainly sunny skies this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 25 below. Northeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies tonight, lows dip down to about 49 below. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 29 below. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have the Joni Skillbred in the studio with me talking about utilities, early utilities, and proposed utilities and dams to create hydroelectricity.
Yes.
And we've done that up here.
We have. Successfully. So we were talking about the Tanana Electric Company, and when we went to the break, they were successful in getting the capital needed to expand into hydroelectric.
What was their first portion then? Was it like wood?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. Wood was our only resource. They locked up the coal. Yep. Wood was it. That was the only thing you could use. So this hydro.
What do you mean by they locked up the coal?
Teddy Roosevelt used one. It was one of the first examples of using a presidential executive order.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to bust up the monopolies of the Guggenheims, J.P. Morgans, and all of them. And so there was a problem with the coal suppliers and producers. They were holding America hostage with this. And so he made it so that they couldn't use Catala. And they had a lot of money sunk into that to Kennecott. And so he used this moratorium on coal to get back at them. And Alaska was caught in the middle.
We got caught in the fight.
We did. So we could only use wood. And so this hydroelectric proposition was really, really important. Well, to do it, they had to go up. Now, I don't know how this would correlate to today's mileage marks for the Steese Highway. But in the early day records, they went up to mile 42 of the trail that went north. And they built ditching from there all the way to the plant. And it was...
Where was the plant at?
It was at the mouth of Cleary Creek on the Chattanooga River, opposite the mouth of Cleary Creek.
Okay.
And so they installed their hydroelectric, that would give it for 5 months of the year.
Historical question that everyone wants to know. Where did the name Cleary come from?
Frank Cleary. And Frank Cleary was E.T. Barnett's brother-in-law.
That came up on the original boat.
Yeah, well, there was actually quite a few members of the Cleary family
on
here.
Isabel Young.
Isabel Cleary Barnett's brother and sister, several of them were here, and they were very, very influential in Fairbanks.
There you go.
Yes, yes. So...
Wanted to connect a few dots of names.
Oh, certainly. So they got it up and running, and everything was going really, really well. And they were expanding, and they sent lines. They built lines. Their power lines ran to Dome, and they ran to all the mines along the way. And they had a line that ran to Cleary City and then beyond Cleary City into the initial parts of Wolf Creek, you know, the lower end of Wolf Creek. And all was well. To do the expansion project, they took out a mortgage on the plant, and that mortgage was backed by the Scandinavian American Bank.
Sons of Norway.
Well, yes, sort of. Which was tied up with the Fairbanks Banking Company and the Washington Alaska Bank. And you remember we had this big bank failure and scandal?
And there went E.T. Barnett.
Well, so the Tanana, there were two big loans out against this conglomeration of banks. And there were two that that kind of played into this whole scandal that E.T. Barnett found himself in the middle of, and that was the Gold Bar Lumber mortgage and then the one for the Tanana Electric Company, because they borrowed a whole lot of money to expand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think about it, so Cleary City had 2,000 residents, and then you have people on the mines, you know, in the mines. So, you know, I would say probably 3,000 or 4,000 potential residents, but, you know, some of them are in groups. So you're looking at 2,000 subscribers maybe. And, you know, you got to make back all this money. You're not even going to turn a profit till you're making this money. And this expansion is very expensive. And you're going to lay, you're going to put in these power lines, which I would lay my last buck that it was all DC power. They didn't use AC in those days. So you have all of that. Everything's going good. And they had a calamity in 1908, right as they get all these lines laid, these expansion lines, Cleary City burns.
That's a
and the bank fails. But Cleary City burns. 2,000 subscribers are now not paying their bills.
Oh, boy.
And they're caught up in the middle of this banking
failure,
which causes...
So their line of credit collapses.
Yes. So all of a sudden, they lose all of their financial solvency. Well, these guys have been out. These linemen have been out working out in the mosquito-infested swamps.
They want to get paid.
They want to get paid. They can't get paid. And
tell that to them.
It was in the fall of the year, and, you know, it was so bad that they went to the city mayor and asked, could they please be put in jail? Because, well, they couldn't get any food. There were no social services in those days. And that's when things really went south. And Cleary City never, you know, it sort of rebuilt. And then I think, if I remember right, it burned a second time, too. But it never really came back. By then, all the hand mining was pretty much coming to a close. They had high graded and they needed dredging would be the next phase in our mining. So, you know, by the teens, there's not very much going on out there in the way of mining. It wasn't like what it was before 1910.
Yeah.
So things are in decline. You're not going to build this back up. So it went into receivership. And Charlie Joint, you know, he was named the receiver, and he's trying to clean up this mess and get it all running. And the Tanana Valley Railroad asked him to come back, and he jumped ship on it as fast as he could because it was such a losing proposition. And the court ordered, they tried to sell it. No, there were no takers. The court ordered it to be liquidated. And he had people out pulling the wire, and they was selling the wire. They were trying to sell the shares of the stock, which was worthless. And Judge Claypool ended up keeping his share and putting it in a picture frame because he had spent a fortune on that piece of artwork, is what he called it.
Better than a doorstop.
Yes. So the actual plant itself ended up being dismantled, put on the Tanana Valley Railroad, hauled to Chena, and it was hauled down to Nenana. And they used it to power the AEC complex down in Nenana for the building of the Alaska Railroad. So that's where the plant went. And that area of town was without power again. You know, it took a big step backwards.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to leave you with some Dr. John, right place, wrong time, some Fox News, state news, some commercials, some weather, and while we're gone, Joni is going to contemplate if we're going to do a talking bench this year at Golden Days.
Oh, no pressure.
We'll be back after all that.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
The Federal Reserve making their decision, leaving key interest rates unchanged. That was expected. They'll hold rates steady at a 23-year high, 5.25% to 5.5%. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, the Senate Judiciary Committee is hearing from big tech CEOs talking about harmful content and child exploitation on social media. Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg says Instagram's working to protect them from that.
We put special restrictions on teen accounts on Instagram. By default, accounts for under 16s are set to private, have the most restrictive content settings, and can't be messaged by adults that they don't follow or people they aren't connected to.
On the Fox News Channel, Florida Congressman Michael Waltz wants a U.S. response after Iranian proxy attack killed three American soldiers.
We have to hit things Iran cares about, like its operatives, its facilities, its oil terminal.
President Biden says he's made up his mind on how to respond in the Middle East, but has not released plans on how. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy urged lawmakers late last night to pass his pilot program that would pay teachers bonuses up to $15,000 a year, pitching it as an investment in the classroom, even as education leaders say a more significant investment in the state's K through 12 public school system is needed. The Republican, in his State of the State speech, also discussed the need for greater opportunity in Alaska, an oil-dependent state experiencing a long-standing trend of more people leaving than moving to it, and efforts to make Alaska more attractive for business and families. School leaders are seeking a $1,413 increase in the current $5,960 per student funding allotment that districts receive, saying that is needed to offset years of inflation and warning of additional cuts to programs and positions without a significant boost. Such an increase would boost state funding by about $360 million. But even lawmakers sympathetic to their pleas question if that amount is politically realistic in a state that has struggled with recurring budget deficits.
At KFAR660.com.
Got the chills? I've got the cure. A chili dog meal deal from A&W. Two chili dogs, drink, and fries served up hot and fast for a limited time at a low, low price. Just $10 now through the end of February, only at A&W on Airport Way.
Ready to fix a great career for yourself? How'd you like to work in a fun and positive environment? Expressway Auto in North Pole is now expanding and is currently accepting positions for automotive and diesel technicians. Applicants should have at least 1 year of experience as well as the skills, knowledge, and attitude to excel. Additional certifications are a plus and can increase your earning power. Applications can be dropped off at Expressway Auto on the Richardson Highway in North Pole, or to schedule an interview, call 888-659-0631. Expressway Auto is an equal opportunity employer.
Some of the world's finest beer and great food. Silver Gulch offers that and more in the heart of the historic Fox Mining District. Silver Gulch has been brewing our favorite beers for many years, and they apply those same standards of perfection with every meal served. The menu is exciting, creative, and delicious. Silver Gulch Brewery. This is what good is all about. Call 907-452-BREW for reservations. Silver Gulch in historic downtown Fox.
ACCA, Alaska Center for Children and Adults, a nonprofit agency serving the Fairbanks community since 1946. ACCA, assisting in improving the lives of people in Fairbanks with disabilities and their families by providing quality diagnostic, therapeutic, educational, and referral services in conjunction with other community providers without regard to ability to pay. For more information, go to alaskacenter.org. Alaska Center for Children and Adults, finding the ability in disability.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Joni Skillbred in the studio here with me, and we've come to, I would call it an agreement, I'd call it an arrangement. Yes, we're going to do a talking bench again.
You heard it first here.
At Golden Days. We did it, what, 3 years ago?
We did, and it was so much fun and
successful.
We did not know how it was going to go. We did this, and I tell you what, I was really surprised. People really, really did enjoy it.
Who was I?
You were Dr. Sutherland.
James Sutherland.
Yes, you were.
And James Sutherland did what?
James Sutherland saved us from the Spanish flu.
And you were?
I was Isabel Barnett. Yes.
The
wife,
the lady behind Isabel Pass. That's what we'll say. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. The wife of E.T. Barnett.
And this next talking bench, who are you going to be?
I am going to be Mary Pedro.
And who am I going to be?
You are going to be Falcon Jocelyn.
That's right.
Yes. Yes. Two very, very important.
Fairbanks is at the base.
Yes, to our history.
Yep.
Yes. You built a railroad.
I built an empire.
Yes. And I fought off creditors.
So did I.
I was a pistol packer.
Yeah, I had to get some legislation passed or else I was going to jail.
Do I get to bring my gun?
It's golden days. You know?
We better get
you know,
that.
First of all, which gun? Anyway.
I have a few.
I know you do. So do I. Anyway.
Okay, so we were talking about the Tanana Electric Company, and, you know, they kind of met their demise for several reasons. But, you know, it was successful from the hydro part was successful from 1906 until 1909. And so it was hydro in the summer, and then they burned wood and fired up the steam boilers
in the winter.
And that was a big help. So it was great. And after that was gone, we're back to wood only. And it's a problem. It's a big problem. And the mines, all the handwork was getting kind of hitting the limits of these mines to be able to do it. Production was really going way down. Fairbanks ended up being in a real pickle. Fairbanks was actually on the verge of ceasing to exist. Had the Alaska Railroad not been built.
And who did that?
Well, Falcon Jocelyn played a huge role in it. And
the Tanana Railroad.
Yes. And so when you talk about the Alaska Railroad being built, you're also going to talk about coal.
Now, Fairbanks, there's something I want you to understand. When I'm in this studio with Joni, she's the absolute expert. And I throw a few tidbits out there. But she's the boss. She's the absolute expert. And that's why she's in the room.
I know enough to be dangerous.
Well, actually, it's entertaining. It's entertaining.
So when you talk the Alaska Railroad, you're also talking freeing up the coal so that we can use coal. Mm-hmm. We had lots of coal down at Healy. Everybody knew it was down there. It's the federal government said, well, we don't care how much coal you have. We don't care how bad you need it. You're not touching it. And we were forced to burn all our trees. And so it was a real problem. Wood was becoming so expensive that people were leaving in droves because they couldn't afford the energy costs here. And the power plant was burning wood, which means you pay for your electricity. Well, that's really expensive because they're burning that expensive wood. We've gone through that in recent times also with diesel. You know, we're forced to use diesel because we can't use anything else. Yeah. You really don't have anything else. So this problem's been going on since the very early days of Fairbanks, and you're being told you can't use this energy source, you can only use this or this, when that's not really what's the most practical here at the time. And so we were constantly fighting this battle. So about the time, you know, about 1912, John Timmons, who was a very interesting character in the history of Alaska. He started out in Juneau, and in the 1880s, he was a volunteer fireman who got drunk when a fire call came in and kind of didn't perform well on his job. And the editor of the paper in Juneau.
What year was this?
Oh, this was in the 1890s.
Okay.
The 1880s, 1890s. And anyway, the editor of the paper said, wrote a bad article saying that he was drunk and everything else. And he got mad and he went into the office. They got into a fight and he shot the editor of the paper. And he was up on murder charges. And but the guy survived. And he had to go do a stint at San Quentin. And he got a presidential pardon from the president of the United States. And what did he do? He came right back up and he went to the Klondike. And he got up there and he ran for public office in Dawson City. And they said, well, he's a felon. He's a convict.
He's an American.
He produced his presidential pardon. He said, no, I am not. This piece of paper says it. I am not a criminal. And so he successfully got elected to office, and then he came here to Fairbanks, and he ran the Tananaw Commercial Company. He had Timmons Corner, which was right there by the Masonic Hall, and the Palace Saloon in Pioneer Park, the original building, that was Timmons' building.
Okay.
They say it's Golden's Groceries, but that building went way before that. Yeah, so he was a merchant here. And he left here, he went down to the States, and he came back up, and he made some friends with a lot of money down there. And he came back up here, and he got involved in some mining properties on the Tatlanica River, which is the upper headwaters of the Wood River drainage. And there's a canyon back up in there, and it's on the eastern side of the Healy coal mines. So it's on the other side of the mountain from those. Pretty great location. And there's a canyon, I think it was called Sheep Canyon there. And these guys wanted to do a dredging operation. And they went, well, we're going to need a lot of electricity because we can't use wood. And they, you know, dredges in those days were all being done as electric rather than fossil fuel burning or wood burning. So they decided to dam up this canyon, and while we're at it, let's put in a big hydro station, and then we can, in the summer, supply Fairbanks, because they wanted to get in on dredging in Fairbanks, but energy was a big problem. So we can supply power to Fairbanks. To the Fairbanks mines, we can supply power to Ruby. I mean, they were going to go big. And we're going to get power for ourselves. And then in the winter, well, the Healy coal mines are right there. We can use coal during the winter. And actually, you know, it was a pretty interesting idea. So they went around and they did just like the other guys, you know, do we have the support? Yes, they did. Everybody was like, oh, yeah, let's do this. They, you know, they got their costs estimated. They had pretty much unlimited financial backing. There were some big interests in the mining world that were interested in this. The Guggenheims were part of this.
I brought in that name earlier.
Yeah. And so everything was great. And they they had to go to London. Most of the money was going to come out of some financiers that were in London. And they went to London, and they sent back word, okay, everything's a go. This is going to happen. And then World War I erupted. And if you know anything about Britain's history and World War I, when that happened, I mean, it was different here. It was slower here. It was an immediate thing that happened there.
Yeah.
And everything went to the war effort. And so some remote power and dredging operation in Alaska is not
on the books anymore.
The rug got yanked right out from under them. And so that proposition failed. Had World War I not broken out, you know, that probably
our power source would be a lot different now.
Well, yeah. That probably would have happened. And I thought that was really, you know, very interesting that that something in Europe prevented something that we desperately needed from happening.
It's always been that way, us or something in Seattle.
We are affected, you know, by more than we think by outside Alaska politics and events.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. Joni and Skillbred and myself will be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Did you miss your favorite local show on KFAR Radio? Just log on to our website, kfarradio.com, and click the Archives tab to find all past episodes of shows like Problem Corner, Health Talk, Fairbanks Foodies, Alaska Realty Today, Shooter's Corner, and the Compos Outdoor Show. Hours of entertaining, informative, local programs produced exclusively for KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Online at kfarradio.com. We are KFAR, the heartbeats of Alaska.
We mean cars.
That's right. We need up to 150 quality used vehicles to fill our lots, and we'll pay you top dollar. Why trade that clean used car to a dealer or go through the hassle of selling it yourself? Just stop into Affordable Used Cars. You'll get a quick 10-minute appraisal on your vehicle. It's that easy. Plus, at Affordable Used Cars, our sales staff will make sure you always get a hassle-free experience. Remember, nobody beats an affordable deal. Nobody.
KFAR weather.
Mainly sunny skies today with daytime highs approaching 25 below. Winds out of the northeast around 5 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies again tonight. Lows level off around 49 below. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 29 below. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Got Joni Skillbred knocking equipment around here. How is whacking that North Korean equipment?
Well, it held up. It's not broken.
So, doesn't mean it's going to work now.
Well, does that mean that North Korean equipment is better than Chinese equipment?
I would not know. Ooh. Oh,
I hope no tourists are listening. That was bad form. Okay, let's go back to the...
I would rather have Chinese equipment than North Korean equipment. The quality is probably a lot better.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I would rather have American equipment.
So would I.
Yes. Well, Alaskan is the best.
Top notch.
I'm an Alaskan manufacturer, you know.
That's, yes, you are.
Yes.
Yes, you. And what is it you manufacture?
Bike pogies. Well, bike pogies, ATV pogies.
Tell us about your mushing season. What happens?
Well, I don't do mushing gear anymore.
You don't?
No.
No more dog.
I had to make a decision. I could do the cycling stuff, or I could do the mushing stuff. I couldn't do both.
Cycling's growing.
So, yeah. Yeah, but anyway, so we finished up with the Tanana Water and Power Company, and we only have a short time, and I want to get these last two done. These last two companies, propositions.
They're propositions.
No, one was in use.
Yeah, Chattanooga Power, yeah.
So both of these are, we have people around town that remember these. Sometimes these are still mentioned. And so I gave them less of a focus because, you know, that's newer history. But the Chattanooga Power Company, after the FE gold dredging came to a halt in the late 50s, the Chattanooga Power Company was formed, and they put a Pelton wheel in the Davidson Ditch, and they started supplying power to the Chattanooga area. And I don't know if they knew, you know, I was wondering when I was reading about it, did they know about the prior hydro stuff? I don't know if they knew it or not. It would be, I just kind of thought.
You know, when it was done.
That it wasn't the first time that hydro had been implemented in the Chattanooga area.
You would think that, yes, they did, because back there, they never forgot.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, in the 50s, there were still people around with memories.
From that age.
So, and you have to, like, today we take it for granted, but I remember during the pipeline, people were buying property and they couldn't get power because we didn't have power going everywhere that we do today.
You know, I talked to Bert Sharp on this air here. And, you know, when he was an engineer, graduated from the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, and he went to work for GVEA. And guess what he said GVEA was? A construction company.
Yeah.
To get all the power lines out to everyone. They were a construction company. They had the plants from the FE company. They were a construction company.
But if you lived in Chattanooga, you didn't have power.
No, you did not.
And so the people of Chattanooga, some of the people there said, okay, we'll do this. Mm-hmm. And so they did it. And they initially did it. And what I looked at reading in the newspaper, and that's kind of limited, but it looked like they just stuck it in there and got it going and then got the permit. Because you have to have permits.
Yeah.
And so
they did it backwards.
Well, they got a little one going, and then they went for the permitting for something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very successful venture, but it got wiped out by the 1967 flood. And it wiped out the ditching. They were using the Davidson Ditch, and they had a catastrophic failure. And they weren't going to get subsidies to
rebuild,
get it going again.
Yeah. So they had to dismantle the infrastructure.
Yes, they did.
Let's go to the final one.
The Rampart Dam.
The most controversial.
Yes. So the Rampart Dam, you know, Fairbanks was still looking for alternatives to power.
Mm-hmm.
For the whole interior, not just for Fairbanks. For the whole interior region, it was a major, major problem, cheap power. And Fairbanks was burning coal, and, you know, coal and wood, those were the main power sources. Fuel was very expensive, just like it is today. And they were looking for something that was cleaner, cheaper, you know, better for the long run, all of that. You're not putting all those emissions in the air. So after World War II, the Army Corps of Engineers put out, they did a lot of research and everything. They came up with the Rampart Dam.
Mm-hmm.
And so downriver from the Yukon River Bridge up the Dalton Highway is the canyon, the Rampart Canyon. And they were going to put a dam in there. And it was going to back up the water in the Yukon River all the way up to Circle City. So all these villages between Circle City and this dam were going to get flooded. And all those native village people were going to have to figure something else out. Well, they weren't very happy about it, of course. I mean, if I was living in Stevens Village, I would have been ballistic about this.
There was a big fight over the validity of that between the owner and the publisher of the Anchorage Times,
mm-hmm.
and Governor Hickel.
Mm-hmm.
On Hickel was pro Rampart, and the owner of the Times and the editor, you know, publisher was anti.
Right.
And I that was just a big fight.
Well, I think the number one reason that it wasn't built was, if you look at the 1960s in the United States, there was a national movement to clean up America and to start conserving our resources. That movement, you know, it started in the late 50s, but it really took hold in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And the Rampart Dam became, you know, embroiled in that, because they started realizing that there were a lot of environmental impacts from having dams. You know, all of a sudden the fish can't get through. You know, people are displaced by the rising waters.
Mm-hmm.
And a Rampart Dam built in Alaska, in the middle of Alaska where there's nothing. Oh my gosh, can you imagine
the
maintenance nightmares?
Yeah.
You know, everything. I mean, it would have been a huge, huge, huge public expense that would benefit a small number of people.
And then they're probably saying, until the native land claims was settled, this isn't going to happen.
Exactly. Well, the death knell hit when Jimmy Carter used an executive order and saved the Yukon Flats, and that was the end of the Rampart Dam forever.
Him and his Antiquities Act.
Yes, that was the end of the Rampart Dam forever. Now, being a person who's been involved in gold mining, you know, you have a lot of turbidity in the Yukon River.
Yeah.
And if you put a dam, what you did is you just made a giant settling pond. And I think back, you know, if they would have got that dam built by 1965, by today, 2024, you know, how much of that water was going to be displaced with settling solids? And then it would change the composition of the river being let go beyond that. So, and, you know, I'm not a diehard environmentalist, but I'm not also a diehard industrialist. I kind of fall in the middle there.
I'm the same way. What makes economic sense without doing any damage?
Yes, but I can really appreciate the negative environmental impacts that dam would have had, and I'm thankful that it didn't get built.
I'm the same way. I was looking at that. You know, I was a teenager looking at that going, they're nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sort of half a kilter off here.
Yeah, well, you know, it would have given a lot of people power, but would that power have been reliable
or sustainable?
I don't know.
Yeah,
or sustainable.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's an awful lot of expense and not enough subscribers to, and that seems to be part of what I'm seeing over and over again with these projects is huge expenses and a limited number of subscribers.
And the subscribers were few and very far apart.
Yes.
And then you'd have to build an infrastructure in each little...
You have to get the power to them.
Yeah.
Very expensive. And think of the cost of doing that today. You know how much copper wire costs?
Well, very good. Very good. Very good. It was a damn good show, Joni Skillbred.
Thank you.
So...
And it was free, you know? That's it. Yeah.
So what are you looking at for February besides hibernation?
Well, I was thinking about maybe doing snow removal, the evolution of snow removal in Fairbanks. It's a very important part.
Yes, it is.
Of our lives here.
You know, think
about the days when we didn't have it. You know, how did we get to where we have all of this stuff today?
You know, as a mayor and previous mayor, future mayors, You're only going to be ranked as you do with snow removal, keeping the streets plowed. That's it.
You keep the trash hauled and keep the streets plowed. Yes. And fire and police, you know. That's your main job.
Number one is the snow plowing. I mean, by far.
Nobody can get to work without it.
And they'll let you know when they can't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I thought that would be an interesting topic.
Well, let's do that. Let's do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's really look at the winter of 2021.
Make us appreciate what we have today.
Yeah. Take a look at Anchorage. Poor Anchorage. My God.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Valdez.
That's a whole different matter.
Yes. Well, there was a picture. My son sent me a picture of a bobcat parked down there by the city dock. It was on the city camera, and he did the time lapse every 12 hours last weekend. They got enough snow last weekend to just about bury a bobcat.
I was...
From Friday night, Friday afternoon to Monday morning.
I was talking to Will Stapp in Juneau, and they had some boat sink in the harbor because they didn't clear the snow off them. They got so much snow. Mm-hmm. The owners didn't have anyone there to shovel the snow off of them.
You have to get those contract agreements in place in the summer. Yes.
Fairbanks, that is our show for today. Ms. Skillbred, always a great show with you. Fairbanks, I will see you on Friday, and we're going to have the executive director and the president of the Yukon Quest in here, and we will determine whether it's going to start on 2nd Avenue or on the river, depending on the weather. I'll see you on Friday.